the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
For those of you who wanted America to be just like Europe financially, you got your wish. The economic numbers this week will show our growth will be just about the same as the stagnating one across the pond. This is Blair Adams for the American Adversaries Drive Time on News Talk 660 WORL. Where we told you so. Now, maybe our listeners can explain to me, I need some explaining to, how an entire mini-series dedicated to showing only, and I accentuate only, the great and wonderful things about future presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Within months of her campaign. Now, how can that not be considered a campaign ad by NBC? Therefore, require, say, equal time? Folks, Hillary is sleazy. NBC is sleazy. Never watch it. And if liberals don't agree, they are sleazy too. And if you don't believe me, my co-host will set you straight right after the right turn to conservatism. Christopher Hart!
Yeah, that's for sure. Thank you so much there, Blair Adams. We appreciate you for being out there, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening to us. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time. And it's kind of dry out there. There was a couple of sprinkles going on out there, but you know the routine. Please just drive safely. And if you've tuned in because you're anticipating hearing the Tampa Bay Rays play the Boston Red Sox this afternoon, that game will be joined in progress as soon as our show is over. So please be patient. If you've never listened to the American Adversaries before, we invite you to stick around and listen until the Rays come on, and hopefully you'll enjoy the show and be interested to come back and listen more often.
We will be the pregame show today.
Yeah, that's right. We're sort of the pregame show. And I am Christopher Hart. That was Blair Adams. Our executive producer, Nostra Dennis, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. In the next segment, our man in Jerusalem is going to join us. That's Abe Katzman, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about with Abe tonight. So we're going to spend a good deal of the hour today talking with Abe Katzman, but we still invite you to join in the conversation. 407-774-8255 is the number. That's 407-774-8255.
Chris, did you hear about that? The miniseries they're going to make about
yes.
Hillary?
You know, we were kind of talked a little bit about it last
sure.
night, but I wasn't aware that it was going to be an NBC miniseries.
Oh, it's a miniseries NBC is doing, and they're not going to say when they're going to release it.
Well, of course, it'll be right
they
at a crucial
are,
time
But they did
for her.
Say that they are sensitive to the idea. It has to be before her official campaign by a certain amount of time. I think there may be rules and regulations about that. It's no way propaganda in a campaign.
And who's the actress? Not Cheryl Ladd, but
Diane Ladd.
Diane Ladd is going to play Hillary Clinton. And boy, that's a stretch. She's going to have to spend a lot of time in makeup.
Well, I got to tell you, this, to me, it is so wrong. This is so sleazy that this is what America's come down to.
Unfortunately so, but I don't expect much more out of these networks.
But don't ask for equal time.
Yeah, that's right. Speaking of time and networks and things like that, I was listening to Carl Jackson's show Saturday morning, and Sherry from Castleberry, who calls our show on a regular basis, and I hope you're out there tonight listening, Sherry. Hi. We heard you call Carl's show, and the final point that she made was that she had heard Carl call Bill Bennett's morning show. Now, mm-hmm. Bill Bennett is the Salem Communications national host that's on here. His show airs from 6 to 9 a.m. every day, Monday through Friday, that is.
We both have met him.
That's right. A great fellow. Very, very smart philosophy professor. You can't be dumb and do that. Anyway, he...
Former Reagan cabinet member?
Yeah, that's right. First drug czar. But he... Carl called his show, and Sherry complimented him on that. Well, this has nothing to do with that, but I just wanted to tell Sherry, you're going to get a chance to hear Carl on Bill Bennett's show again tomorrow morning. This time, not as a caller, but as a guest. And that's thanks to Nostra Dennis and him doing a little call action this morning. But Carl Jackson will be on Bill Bennett's show tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. And he'll be the guest for that segment of the show. That's 6:30 a.m. Carl Jackson on Bill Bennett's nationally syndicated talk show.
You know, that's worth waking up for.
Sure enough is. It sure enough is. So that'll be exciting. That's exciting news for all of us around here because we really enjoy and feel privileged to have Carl as part of the team.
Well, now, real quick question, Chris. Does that mean people, if they do miss the show, they can still get on to hear 660 and hear repeats of that?
What we're going to do is we're going to make sure we get that segment, and we're going to put it up on our
stuff. That's what I was hoping for. That was my roundabout way of saying that.
We'll get Carl and see if he can't get it on his website, but we'll put it up where you can go to our archive, and you'll be able to find that. Just like you can find my adventure on WKLA. I think that's the Los Angeles station from a couple of weeks ago.
You had a good time with our buddy Ben Shapiro, sounds like.
Yeah, you might call it that. I had a good time. I don't know if they did. Okay.
The confrontational Chris.
yes, always. Before we get to going much further, though, so here I was this morning. You know, minding my own business, eating my oatmeal.
Innocent Chris, yeah.
Yeah, reading my Wall Street Journal. And I come across this on the opinion page. Now, I'm going to tell you what it says before I tell you who wrote it. Okay? It's called, it's entitled, "The Affordable Care Act's Rate Setting Won't Work." And this is just a highlight from the story. "Experience tells me the Independent Payment Advisory Board will fail." And this person is a former governor, and he goes to explain how this crucial part of the what we call the Unaffordable Care Act is not going to work. This advisory board, which is going to set payments and things like that.
Oh, it's a huge part of it.
Right. And this governor knows that it's not going to work because it was tried in his state from 1991 to 2002. Governor Howard Dean of Vermont.
No.
Yes, former chair of the Democratic Party, chairman of the Democratic Party. That's him. Yeah, that Howard Dean. Is now he tells us that Obamacare essentially now he's telling us is not going to work. And he knew it all along because from 1991 to 2002, they tried the same thing and it failed.
No, Chris. I remember this guy standing up and saying, this is what we need. This is what we need.
Yeah.
And this guy's a doctor.
That's right. Dr. Howard Dean.
Yep.
And he says, let me just read this. To date, 22 Democrats have joined Republicans in the House and Senate in support of legislation to do away with the Independent Payment Advisory Board. Yet because of the extraordinary partisanship on Capitol Hill and Republican threats to defund the law through appropriations processes, it is unlikely any change in the Affordable Care Act will take place soon. Basically, what he's arguing in a roundabout way is, we can fix this, okay? We can do away with this board, we can take care of this problem and save Obamacare, right? But in essence, what he's saying, though, is a crucial part of it this never was going to work. The IPAB, the Independent Payment Advisory Board, will cause frustration to providers and patients alike, and it will fail to control costs. And that's what it's set up to do.
It's one of the legs of the whole program.
Exactly. When and if the atmosphere on Capitol Hill improves and leadership becomes interested again in addressing real problems instead of posturing, getting rid of the IPAB is something Democrats and Republicans ought to agree on. In other words, they they need to now come together to address a real problem that they created. Or at least the Democrats and Obama created when they created this monstrosity known as Obamacare. Just another reason why we should be praying, begging our legislators to do something about this, defund it, whatever they have to do to get rid of it, because it is a monstrosity that's going to destroy this country.
And then, too, we have the more news about the NSA, of course, and during the hearings, we now know that any one of the people sitting at their little cubicle that work for the NSA at any time, Chris, they can pull up your phone conversations, your email at any time, and sit right there. They have their device right there that they can do it. Oh, no, they won't!
Yeah, that's what they tell
us.
Yeah, I saw Saxby Chambliss on TV yesterday morning saying, they don't, I went out and toured the facility and they assured me they don't have the capability to do this.
Well, same as Barbara Boxer.
And that's just a misstatement or a lie or whatever you want to put it. They have the capability. They have rules against it, but the capability is there because you're talking the digital web world, folks. All you need is a little window into it, and you can see anything that's in there.
Hello, some guy sitting in Russia.
That's right. Okay, we're going to come back with Abe Katzman from Jerusalem. And you're welcome to join us. Please stick around.
From Vacation Travel Planners, bringing you the travel deals of the week, like Bahama cruises from $199 per person. Book the new Norwegian getaway and receive $100 onboard credit.
Oh, yeah!
MSC's Divina is also coming to Miami. Rates start at $499 per person. Princess is offering balcony upgrades plus $100 onboard credit on all their exotic destinations like Australia and South America. Disney Cruise Line has specials on the Disney Magic. Call for details. Sandals and Beaches Resorts are offering up to 65% off. Plus, military and firefighters receive an additional 10% off. Give us a call at 321-251-4777. That's 321-251-4777. Or visit us at vacationtravelplanners.com. Keep listening for new travel specials every week. Bon voyage!
The American Adversaries, where you and the president can wrestle for the truth.
We're still in this wrestling match with
Blair Adams
and
Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. I am Christopher Hart, and along with Lair Adams, we are the American Adversaries Drive Time here with you this afternoon. And we've got our man in Jerusalem on the line now, so I'm not going to keep him waiting 1 second longer because we have a lot to talk about with him. And, of course, I'm talking about Abe Katzman, and you can read his work on abekatzman.com. Abe, thanks for being with us tonight. We missed you last week.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. Good to be back.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Always great to have you.
Absolutely. You've written an article that ended up in the Times of Israel, but I want to wait till Nostradamus joins us at the bottom of the hour to get into that. So if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of go around the circuit in the Middle East with you. First of all...
Is there anything to talk about this week?
Well, I'll see if I can find something.
A peace plan.
Yeah, why don't we start there? Evidently, tonight, I think there's going to be a sit-down meeting. Has it already happened, or is it happening here in the United States between some delegates from Israel and the Palestine Authority set up by John Kerry? What's going on there?
I believe there are supposed to be some kind of negotiations, or at least initial meetings that begin tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
There is something going today. But I think that the official meeting begins tomorrow. Two negotiators from Israel, two from the Palestinians, and an intermediary from the U.S. What happens there? We shall see.
Now, evidently to get this meeting set up, Netanyahu had to promise to release some prisoners. Is that correct?
That is correct. It wasn't, and it's not just some prisoners. The prisoners that are being released overwhelmingly are prisoners with blood on their hands. These are people who murdered Israelis. Many of them, in fact, most of them have been in prison for quite some time. Some of them actually initially were sentenced to death, but Israel does not impose the death penalty. They've only done it once, and that was against Adolf Eichmann. So I think they sort of feel like they'd be cheapening the death penalty if they would impose it on anyone else. It's a debate that comes up every so often.
Yeah.
And it may come up again now because the Israeli public is not happy with this.
They don't understand.
That was going to be my next question. What's the public reaction to this?
Well, what did you guys get out of it? What does Israel get out of this whole wonderful exchange?
Well, Israel gets the privilege of sitting down with the Palestinian negotiators for the first time in a few years. Why that is a precondition, it's a very good question. And one of the things that frustrates Israelis so much is that this is, you know, all of these prisoner releases and the preconditions that the Palestinians were setting forth, they're always billed as confidence-building measures.
Right.
Somehow Israel needs to help build the confidence of the Palestinians. Well, how about the confidence of the Israelis? What does it say about the Palestinians that they are demanding the release of a bunch of, a bunch of terrorist murderers who are going to return to the Palestinian areas. They're going to be hailed as heroes. What kind of confidence does that instill in the Israelis that the Palestinians are really ready to make any kind of peace that would accept the existence of Israel as a viable Jewish state?
And to me, it's one of the worst things, because it just proves in their mind, if they just wait a little bit longer, you know, the United States, Israel will finally give in. This is a sign that that's true.
And Abe, don't you understand, if you open your arms to hug someone, they'll open their arms to you too.
Kumbaya.
Yes.
Well,
we laugh, but it's kind of sick.
Well, yeah. This is an issue that extends beyond Israel and Palestine, because the administration is now also seeking to offer, if you will, a conciliatory tone to Iran by easing sanctions against Iran. Now, the Congress is trying to stiffen them, but this administration, you know, evidently being advised by John Kerry, want to, you know, hold out an olive branch to this new president, who you have rightly said, you know, is no moderate.
The new boss is the same as the old boss. Really not a whole lot different. It's possible. Now, this is my hunch, because this prisoner release makes so little sense on its own. And Bibi Netanyahu, whatever else you might have to say about him, is not a guy who just wakes up in the morning and decides he's going to release a bunch of terrorists.
Yeah, he's
somebody who actually was involved in capturing some of these people.
Right.
When he was younger.
I smell a deal.
He literally wrote the book about terrorism. I mean, wrote a terrific book about combating terrorism. And, you know, there's no chapter in there on releasing all the terrorists that you hold. So there's a question of maybe what else might be involved here. What is there behind the scenes? What more is there to this deal than meets the eye? And I suppose the obvious possibilities are there's some deal going on having to do with American commitments on military action against Iran, or allowing Israel to take military actions against Iran. That would be one. That's certainly one thing. There might be a calculation involved that it's worth it. You know, Israel's gotten beaten up diplomatically, and they've had some certain sanctions that it looks like the European Union is going to be imposing against them. And it may be that in order to get everybody off their back, they figure, you know what, we'll release these prisoners. These are older prisoners. By the way, these are all prisoners from before the Oslo peace agreement, which was in 1993. So these are people who have been sitting in prison for a long time.
Right.
Maybe they feel it's worth releasing these guys because the Palestinians are going to be unable to come to make any kind of deal. The talks will fail, and fail spectacularly, perhaps. And the Palestinians, for a change, will end up getting the blame. Something along those lines. But I'll say this. The Israelis may be geniuses when it comes to the military, and they may be geniuses when it comes to intelligence, but they are terrible at making these diplomatic gambles. Their history of them, I mean, Oslo is the most obvious example, where they thought that by bringing the gamble of bringing in the PLO basically setting them up in government,
giving them legitimacy,
take care of Hamas, would really bring peace. And instead, it was probably the most serious self-inflicted wound that any country has ever made against
them. They sound like Democrats.
It was a diplomatic blunder to give Arafat and the PLO that kind of status.
But it goes back even, you know, with other things. Back when they were getting into Lebanon, and they kind of went in thinking, and maybe correctly thinking, that if they set up Bashir Gemayel, if you remember that name, of the Falangists, that he'd be an ally of theirs, and he was for a few weeks until he was assassinated. They even allowed for the, you know, didn't squash the creation of Hamas because they thought it was a good counterweight to what there was before. And now look what happened. They're just terrible when it comes to this.
Yeah, I think that there's actually too much thought put into this. In other words, you know, if we do this, then that, and then that, and that, and that, and that. It's sort of like a chain reaction they think that's going to happen, and of course it never does because human behavior never reacts really the way you predict it will. And so, I can see where that sort of decision-making has been flawed. Listen, we're out of time in this segment, Abe, but sure. If you'll stay with us. In the next segment, I want to talk a little bit about Egypt and then this America's Racial Spasm, the article that you wrote. And so I believe adeptly explained our race relations here in the United States. So we'll be right back with Abe Katzman on the American Adversaries Drive Time.
That's right. And callers, please hang on. We have a hard break right now. If you hang on, we'll get back to you when we come back. We are the American Adversaries, of course. This is our Drive Time show, heard Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 o'clock. If you'd like to call in, 774-825-5407 is the preface. We'll be right back.
For 16 years, Cafe Positano has been famous for blending their traditional Italian family recipes with the latest cuisines. They offer affordable fine dining in the banquet room and more casual dining in the main area. From pizza to specialty dishes and tender, juicy prime rib, everything is made fresh daily, even our sauces. And owner Pasquale Barbara promises you'll want to return. Located 4 miles west on I-4 on 436, phone 407-774-8080.
Cafe Positano is true Italian food, e lo prometto.
More political mayhem is on the way. You're listening to The American Adversaries on 660 WORL. If you can take it.
All right, we are back. Christopher Hart, Larry Adams. We now have our executive producer, Nostradamus, joining us, and we're talking with Abe Katzman, our man in Jerusalem. And I want to get right back to Abe, but once again, you can join us as well, 407-774-8255. We have Rick on the line, and Rick, thanks for calling, and you have a comment for Abe.
Evening, guys.
How you doing?
Hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I heard today on the Blaze Radio that our incompetent in chief has invited Hillary Clinton to sit in on these Palestinian negotiations. And I'm just wondering, do you think she has anything to offer, or is this just a pad or resume for her run in 2016?
Abe, had you heard? Thank you, Rick. We appreciate the call. Abe, had you heard anything about that?
I hadn't heard it. I don't think that it is yet in the Israeli press, although we'll see what happens in the morning papers. I don't know what she'd add. I don't know that she's got any particular expertise on this. She never got anybody, but the entire time she was in office, she never got any negotiations going.
Her time as Secretary of State was one of the biggest wastes of time in the history of that office. She did nothing. Nothing. I mean, name me one accomplishment that woman did as Secretary of State.
Well, these talks may turn out to be a waste of time also, in which case that's one area where she has a lot of experience.
Well,
that's a good way to put it. All Israelis loved Hillary.
Right.
Israelis like Bill.
Israelis
truly like Bill. They don't care so much for Hillary.
Well, that's good because he's had his two terms. speaking of terms as president, Abe, let's talk a few minutes about Egypt. First of all, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi.
Well, he seems to be in control, and he seems to be consolidating power. He was actually put in by Morsi to run the military.
Right.
And I think the feeling at the time was that was part of a Muslim Brotherhood effort to purge the military of Mubarak loyalists and put in their own people. But he has is certainly no Muslim Brotherhood loyalist.
And he seems to be the man running the show over there right now.
He is, and it'll be, I don't know what's going to happen there. Right now, the military is riding high, and we'll see what happens after a little while when the economy still doesn't improve. Economically, Egypt is a basket case, and nobody is going to make the population happy with the sudden newfound prosperity. That's just not happening.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because there's some thought over here that at least to me, and I've heard this whispers of this in other media outlets, that basically this whole coup thing, rather than, if you will, doing away with the Muslim Brotherhood, it more or less rescued the Muslim Brotherhood from exactly what you just talked about. The economy over there is a basket case. That's really what's driving the protests. And they were not going to be able to do anything about it. And unfortunately, as you just said, the new guys in town may not be able to do anything about it either, which is then going to shift power perhaps even more profoundly back to the Muslim Brotherhood. Can you see that sort of scenario playing out?
It's anybody's guess. Of course, you made a huge error when you called the takeover a coup, because we all know that was not.
Yeah, it was friendly.
Pardon my ignorance.
We're not done. Egypt is the story is not over. And keep in mind also in terms of how Islamic it is, you know, the Islamists won, the Muslim Brotherhood won 50% of the vote. The Salafists, who are even more radically Muslim, won 25%.
Right.
10% of the country is Coptic Christian, or maybe it's less now that they've been fleeing. But at any rate, that means that, you know, you're talking about 75% out of the 90% of Muslims were voting for the Islamists. So I'm not sure exactly who, we all think that it was the Facebook using and tweeting secularists that were behind the Arab Spring. There just weren't that many of them. Then again, on the other hand, you know, just because somebody is Muslim doesn't necessarily mean that he's an Islamist. And the fact that they voted for them once doesn't necessarily mean that they would vote for them again. I don't think anybody's all that happy with their performance in office.
Yes, and another country that has our fingerprint on it over there, Iraq, this weekend had a lot of problems. A lot of people killed in bombings.
That seems to be happening periodically, but we're not there. There was never a status of forces agreement hammered out, so
that's exactly what I mean.
It has our fingerprints, but it doesn't have our involvement anymore.
Right. Abe, let's bring in Nostradamus now. Nostradamus, who's over at headquarters tonight, how you doing?
Oh, it's a little drippy out here. I'm out here in the veranda, and pardon me if you can hear the rain slapping down on the awning.
Okay.
It's nice where we are.
Real quickly, any questions for Abe regarding the Egypt, Israel, and that sort of thing before we talk about this America's Racial Spasm article that he wrote?
Yeah, no, I want to get right to the Zimmerman story because it is such a good look at what happened in the case.
Well, okay. Abe, you wrote an article entitled America's Racial Spasm and also subtitled...
And the president who isn't helping matters.
And the president who isn't helping matters, absolutely. And I think that you pretty well laid out, you know, what the president's up to here, right?
Well, the president blew a golden opportunity, if depending on what his what he's looking for.
But right.
From I think the perspective of peace and harmony in America, the president could have gotten up there. I mean, this is the first black president He could have gotten up there and said, look, I understand racial anger, but this is a country of laws, and we obey the laws. You don't, that we respect the process, and, you know, violence is not a legitimate means of expression of unhappiness with a verdict. But instead, you know, the president who before said, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon, this time said, you know, I could have been Trayvon, or Trayvon, I forget exactly how he said it.
So that could have been me 35 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And he, you know, he didn't even do it on the first day. It was already, it's almost as if he wanted to keep stirring the pot a bit in terms of the racial politics that were boiling over. I mean, he did that. That was the Friday following the verdict already, after a week of violence and rioting and some looting and people being beaten up by groups, saying this is for Trayvon. I mean, you know, and to stay silent until then, and then to bring race into it, and to kind of, you know, pull in all this, the black victimization, reasons that really have nothing to do with this case.
You're absolutely right. You even talk about Maya Angelou being worried that this whole thing, you know, says something about how far yet we have to go in race relations.
Yeah, she said that she said she was shaken by the verdict.
Yeah.
And that you know, that one man armed with a gun can profile a young man because he is black and end up shooting him dead. That's her take on this case? That's really what she thinks is this was about? I mean, if that's what you think it's about, then I guess you're right. But, you know, that's just not this case.
Well, facts be damned.
Yeah, and that's, unfortunately, you know, every time I turn on the TV, I see somebody else who has all the facts wrong in this case. It seems like they're all intent on portraying this as some poor little innocent kid walking home, and this mad maniac, you know, guns him down in the street. And it was nothing anywhere
only
like that.
Only because he's black.
It was nothing at all like that. You also say in your article that let me go back to Nostradamus while I look for this one point in your article I wanted to. Nostradamus, go ahead and take it real quick.
Sure. Abe, I like the way you kind of compare this trial to a Kafka novel, because it really did feel surreal, and I think the aftermath is the same. As Chris was saying, we have seen from start to finish every piece of evidence that went on in this case, and still people are getting it wrong. People are spouting back what they heard from the mainstream media when every fact in the case is open. Can you comment on that?
There's willful ignorance for political reasons and for racially political reasons. Look, we all know there's a, you know, kind of a race incitement industry in America, and it's in their interest to make sure that everybody, that it is assumed that America is still a thoroughly racist society, and that, you know, that there's no way that a white man could be convicted that this is a sign that a white man cannot be convicted in today's America for the cold-blooded murder of a black teenager. But it's, I mean, it's just such an inversion of justice. And, yeah, you know, the idea at the end, I spoke about this being almost like To Kill a Mockingbird in reverse.
Sure. Yeah.
You have a white defendant who's doomed by his race. And what's so disturbing to me is that especially the black race insiders, I shouldn't limit it to the black, the race insiders, looking back, it doesn't even seem to, that they were so upset by the injustice of yesteryear, that they were just upset by which race was on the receiving end of it. They don't seem to be bothered that an individual white man, just a regular guy, that they would
Hispanic man
to lynch him.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's what I was saying last week or the week before, that this is just a lynching, if you will. And we've been saying since the start of this thing that it would be an injustice, you know, to carry out, you know, this racial profiling against George Zimmerman, if you will. And by the way, I found the statement in here that I wanted you to say something about. You say in here, the injection of race by outsiders into the judicial process can only serve to corrupt the search for truth and justice. I would submit to you that, Abe, that that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to corrupt the search for truth and justice. That's what's going on here.
I said also that, you know, that a trial, when you think about it, a trial is exactly the opposite of what racial politics, group politics are about.
Right.
This isn't about the group. It's about what happened.
Between,
the interaction between two individuals.
Correct.
Whatever color. This has nothing to do with group grievances.
You're absolutely right. Abe, we have Abe on the line who would like to make a comment to you, and then we'll get back to Nostradamus. So let's go to Abe. Thank you for calling this afternoon, Abe, and your comment for Abe. Do we have Abe still on the line? Okay, we're getting Abe on for you. By the way, folks, if you'd like to join us as well, 407-774-8255 is that number. Okay, I'm sorry, we got their name wrong. It's Diane who has a comment for Abe. Diane, thank you for calling.
Too bad. That would have been a first for me.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to change my name. I'm sorry.
Hey, Abe, how are you?
Okay, go ahead.
I just want to say that, I mean, what do you expect from this guy? He's a community organizer, and it's the only thing he knows, and he's doing his job very well.
Thank you, Diane. And she kind of sums it up pretty well, you know, community organizing, rabble-rousing, and that same thing to me.
I think the instinct is still there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, he's just using this event the way he uses every event to go out there and work the crowd, is the way I put it. In other words, you know, to work people up into a fervor so that they will see him as their champion. And he doesn't care about Trayvon Martin. All he cares about is that he gets some mileage out of it.
That's right, and it needs a new sermon every week.
Nostradamus said,
I think it also helps keep everybody from paying attention to things like the latest in the IRS scandal, which seems to be moving higher and higher up the ladder.
Right.
You know, I mean, this was something that just dominated the news in America for a week.
Oh, it did.
And I very much to the relief of the White House, considering what was going on with all these different scandals.
Yeah, that's a point that Lair made as well a couple of weeks ago. Nostradamus, you still there?
Yes, I am. And in fact, Abe, let me just correct you before I let you go. You characterized our president as a black president. Like George Zimmerman, he is one half cracker.
Oh, okay.
Gotta get that right.
Yeah, you did.
I think you did.
In your own way.
But he couldn't be classified as a chubby cracker, half chubby cracker.
No.
Okay, any other questions for Abe, Dennis?
No, none at all. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Abe, I saw an article. It was in the Orlando Sentinel, and it kind of stunned me because I never even knew this, but evidently, if you are an American and you're born in Jerusalem, you cannot claim Israel is your place of birth. Were you aware of that?
Yes, I actually know the couple that has been trying now for, I don't know, what is it, 10 years already?
10 years, yeah.
To have Israel placed on their son's passport.
Yeah, their son Menachem.
Two American citizens, they moved to Israel, they're dual citizens, and on the son was born in Jerusalem. I mean, they moved to Israel, you know, and they're living in Jerusalem. And the American policy is, this is a State Department policy.
Correct.
That they will not write, that they believe somehow that putting Israel on the passport would, or on the birth certificate, I guess, would somehow be a concession about the status of Jerusalem, even West Jerusalem. But that would be a something about the status of Jerusalem, and that's a matter that should be decided in final status negotiations with the Taliban.
Whether it's a Jewish or Palestinian
capital.
enclave, whatever.
Yeah, even though the United States recognized, you know, Harry Truman in 1948 Israel as a sovereign nation, it has never, and no president has declared Jerusalem as part officially of Israel. And of course,
the state, it was going to be an international protectorate.
Right.
But that collapsed. The Jordanians invaded and took over what was all of East Jerusalem, all the holy places, the old city, the Wailing Wall, all those places were taken over by the Jordanians and vandalized. By the way, they blew up, I think, something like 48 synagogues.
They tried to eliminate all signs of Jewish life.
Israel controlled the western half of the city, and that's Israel's capital. Israel, the Knesset is there. The prime minister is.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, nobody is suggesting that in any negotiations, in any scenario, that West Jerusalem would be, is on the bargaining table.
Yeah.
Any scenario.
Right. And why this is in the news is because in 2002, when George W. Bush was president, the Congress actually did pass a law that required the State Department to record Israel as the birthplace of Jerusalem, but this court has struck that law down and saying that it was not Congress's purview. It was the executive branch of the government that sets these criteria, if you will. But it was a stunner to me.
As a legal matter, that may very well be a correct decision.
Legally speaking, yes, but morally speaking,
why that's the policy, that's really the big question.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Abe, but legally speaking, yes, but morally speaking, no, it is not right at all.
Okay, all right,
Abe, we covered a lot of territory, and you've really educated us quite well tonight. I want to thank you so much once again for being on our show, and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Abe.
Don't forget, folks, you can read Abe's material at Abe Katzman, that's Katzman with an S, .com, abekatzman.com. Check him out. We'll be right back.
Here comes Johnny B.
Bad. Oh, hello, Florida. This is Mark Merrill. You may know me in wrestling as a star, Johnny B. Bad. I listen to the American Adversaries, and you should too. Don't let me come and get you, because I'll kick your booty with my tootie fruity.
Okay, we'll find out what a tutti frutti is later. I don't think it's gum either. Folks, we are the American Adversaries. Larry Adams here with my co-host Christopher Hart. Nestor Dennis is on the line. And it says right here we have a caller calling in. It's interesting how it's on our flash screen here, Willie. It says, Willie, quick. So we only have a few minutes. Willie, quick, tell us what's on your mind.
I really enjoy Abe's insight and Middle East politics, but he's uncanny on American politics. It's really, really, he's bilingual. Getting back on Barack Obama's quote about if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Well, if he had a city, it would look like Detroit.
You're right.
No, what he's doing is he's making the United States of all the United States of America look like Detroit. Of an excellent point.
Now, Willie, do you really think we are not going to end up bailing out Detroit?
I know we're going to bail out Detroit. It's a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And California and everywhere else.
It always comes back.
Well, New York.
It always
the
comes.
Good news is we're out of money, so it really doesn't matter.
Just going to print up another couple billion. What's the big deal?
There you go.
Just cost a few dollars in paper and electricity. What's the deal? Thank you, Willie. We appreciate
it. And
you
kiss your Social Security, but goodbye.
All right, let's go back to Nestor Dennis. Hey, Nestor Dennis. Good job getting Carl Jackson set up on the Bill Bennett Show tomorrow morning at 6:30 a.m.
You know what? It's easy to be Carl's radio wingman because people are not going to listen to creepy-ass crackers like you and me telling that community what they should be doing. They are going to listen to voices like Carl Jackson's and like Larry Elder's. They may not all listen, but some of them will listen.
Yeah, and that's going to be the topic tomorrow morning is the black community and what they can do to better their situation.
So are you telling me I need to change my race, Dennis?
No, not at all. You can say exactly how you are, Larry.
Well, the thing is, you know, really, the Census Bureau now, that's basically how they determine your race. You tell them what you are. So what'll it be next week?
Yeah.
No, I have never filled that out. I've always filled out, I've left that blank, and they've called me twice, and I've said, human.
Yeah, but under sex, you wrote no.
Yeah, but see, now they're not even going to have to call you anymore, right, Nestor Dennis? Now they can just listen in.
That's right. You know how some newscasters at the end of the news, they'll say, we'll see you tomorrow. Well, in some cases in the future that may actually be possible.
Not just in the future. This is already possible.
Yep.
They are developing devices. Tech giants like Microsoft and pay TV providers like Verizon are developing devices that can monitor our behaviors as we watch TV and play games. For instance, they can hear our conversation in the background as we're watching the TV. In some cases, they can actually turn on motion sensor video cameras. So if you stay exactly still in the middle of your living room, they may not be able to see you.
Yes.
But they might.
Yeah, right. Well, but, you know, they promise not to do anything like that, right? Just like the NSA will promise us that they aren't going to do anything inappropriate. No, they could do it, but they just won't do it.
Well, there's a bill in Congress that's requiring
that's
that
it
be an opt-in, that consumers would have to grant their consent before companies can do that.
Big
that
brother.
Bill, though, is still in committee.
Big brother.
It's right out of George Orwell.
Big brother.
Sure. Thank you, Dennis. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Big brother. That's right. The American Adversaries. We're here to stop Big Brother
in his tracks.
Big government. Listen, tomorrow night, we'll tell you how. Have a great evening.
And we'll have Victoria Jackson. Night, everybody.
Woo.